Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill, a new podcast series from Newstalk.
Hello, I'm Luke O'Neill, and welcome to this week's Show Me the Science. And every week I pick a topic in science that I love, that I'm very interested in, or I come across something recently that might strike me and say those new things, because of course science keeps moving forward, remember, new things keep getting discovered. And this week, it's the science of sports, medicine and exercise. It's all about, you know, exercise. Is it good for us? What's the best way to do it? It's all about being fit. It's all about being fast, stronger, endurance, all those things. And there's a huge amount of science behind exercise and what we call the physiology of exercise. And it's a part, important part of medicine, actually. It is called sports medicine, and it's a specialty, because obviously doctors who specialise look after athletes and anybody really who has a sports injury, for example. And how do we treat sports injuries, or how do we come up with training regimens for people to be fit? So it's a really big area, to be honest. And of course, everybody is mad keen, aren't they, on running. Another really interesting part I'm going to talk about is what makes someone a great athlete. And is it just training, or is it genetic? And there's some really good stuff coming out now on genes, particular variants in genes that may make you a great athlete and may improve endurance and various things. And that's a really fascinating part. And of course, you know, one question that lots of people ask is, why was that athlete so brilliant? The most successful athlete of all time, guess who it is? It's Michael Phelps. For the second straight Olympics, Phelps at the end gets it done. He has won 23 gold medals at the Olympics. I mean, for crying out loud, that is a massive multiple of Ireland in history ever. And he's a single person, great swimmer. Why was he so good? Now, we think it's his leg to body ratio is optimum. I think he was called the flipper at one time, actually, because he's this fantastic physique for swimming. So it must be to do with his natural physique and, of course, his fantastic commitment to the sport. So we might discuss what is it that makes a great athlete. Now, of course, if we start with fitness, it's obvious what this is. It involves exercise. It involves nutrition, which is a very important part. The exercise can be moderate or vigorous, depending on what the recommendation is. But interestingly, it also involves rest. If you want to get really fit, physically fit, there's no point pumping away at things forever. You got to take periods of rest as well. Because every time you exercise, interestingly, you damage your muscle a tiny bit. And that can be good because the muscle comes back a bit stronger. But again, rest turns out to be almost as important as the exercise regimen. And that's become more and more clear recently. And of course, trainers and sports medicine experts will give someone a fitness program to follow. This can be tailored based on your age and your physical strength and so on. And lots of people go to gyms and have trainers in various ways to advise them. And is there any basis for this? Well, of course there is. Lots of people know now exactly what to recommend. And really, they call this the triangle. Trainers call this sort of area. There's three things you need. Each one will be a tip of the triangle. Your physical health, your emotional health, and your mental fitness. So there's three types of fitness. Now, the mental and emotional obviously overlap a bit, but you've got to consider all three, especially if you're training an athlete.
No, don't stop. You got more in you than that.
It's not just about the physical, it's also about the emotional and the mental aspects, and that's an important part overall. And they think that's about motivation, because what keeps you running a marathon, or what makes you climb a huge big mountain, is actually things to like endurance, for instance, and that can be as much in your mind as in your body.
That's it. Keep going. Don't quit them. Keep going.
So this axis between the mind and the body is really important in sports medicine as well. Now, to get to the bottom line in some ways, the recommendation is this, if you're wondering. 150 to 300 minutes per week of moderate exercise is ideal. Now, what's moderate exercise? That means getting your heart rate up. It can be walking vigorously. It can be doing whatever in your garden and getting your heart rate up. Anything that gets your heart rate up a bit is considered to be moderate intensity exercise. And you need to be getting 300 minutes a week. And that's really well supported by many studies. If you're older, you're probably a bit less, because if you're older, the trouble is you might injure yourself a bit, and that's a negative. 150 minutes is recommended for older people, for instance. But it's in that range, 150 to 300 minutes per week. Or you can do 75 to 150 minutes of vigorous intensity. Now, what's that? Well, that's things like weightlifting or going to a gym and really going hard at it and get your heart rate up a huge amount. Now, again, that's okay for older people as well, but that can put a strain on the body. So in general terms, for older people, stick with the moderate and get up to 150 minutes and you'll be fine. Other people can get up to 150 or 75 minutes at the lower limit of this really rigorous exercise. Now, how do you know you're doing it right? Well, your heart rate goes up, obviously, and you sweat. Now, working up a sweat is evidence that you're achieving these minutes, especially with the vigorous intensity. A little bit of sweat's good. So never worry if you're sweating a bit. That's a good sign. And you can sweat a little bit as you walk vigorously as well. And of course, we know an awful lot about the biochemistry of this. So if you take moderate exercise, that's called aerobic exercise. You're taking in oxygen. You're using the oxygen to burn things like glucose and fat to provide the energy to get the muscles to work properly. And that's standard physiology. If you do high intensity, that's called anaerobic, because now you're using your muscles so much that you run out of oxygen in the muscles and now there's no more oxygen. It's called anaerobic. And a byproduct of that is a thing called lactate. Now, you might realize after you've exercised, if you feel a bit stiff, and we all get stiffness, that's lactate that's built up in your tissues and your body can clear that away. But again, you don't want too much lactate. And one thing we've learned is don't be overdoing it, especially as you get older. If you're really stiff for hours and hours after, that's a bad sign. You've probably damaged your muscle a little bit. So again, caution is needed and moderation as ever. Now, this it's different if you're training for a big event, obviously, then you might really go hard at it. But just general for general well-being and health, keep an eye on the lactate and mainly go for aerobic. Exercise is the overall guidance, I suppose. Now, what will this give you? Well, it's all about endurance. Obviously, you can keep going at things. It can be about speed, especially if you go for the anaerobic one, and power, you know. So weightlifting is very good for that. So it kind of depends on what you want to do. If you want to be a sprinter, that's totally anaerobic. So you'll do one type of exercise to get those muscles going. If you're more of a marathon runner, that's more endurance. And again, different types of exercise will allow you to achieve those various things. And it's a very interesting thing. Now, what is the evidence exercise is good for you? Now, I'm inclined to be lazy. I get up off the couch and make myself a cup of tea. That's exercise for me. Although I do walk a lot, I must realise. I get my heart rate up as I walk. And probably when I ever had a medical, they say, you're not too bad. I mean, hang on a minute. I never go running. I never do sport, staggering as it may seem. But I do actually get my heart rate up as I walk everywhere. So that's probably my secret. But there's no doubt it's very good for you. Now we know this, don't we? We keep hearing it. It controls your blood pressure, number one. And remember, high blood pressure is a massive negative. Why is that? Well, you're pumping blood around your body, it's great, you know, and the blood pressure doesn't build up then. That's one reason. Secondly, it keeps the tubes a bit cleaner and therefore you don't get what's called atherosclerosis, which can cause an increase in blood pressure. So it's good for blood pressure and it gets even better then. It lowers cholesterol and that's a risk for heart disease, decreases the risk of diabetes and my favourite area, of course, it really gets your immune system going. And again, I love this because study after study has shown this. If you exercise, it really energizes your immune system. And I saw a study last week, for example. If you keep to the 150 minutes right per week, you will have twice the number of natural killer cells in your blood. Now, isn't that a great name? Natural killer cells, their job is to kill viruses. And you've doubled the number simply by doing 150 minutes of walking at pace a week.
Coming in incredible numbers.
And we're living in a time of COVID. Get out there. Get the natural, double the number of troops in your blood. And then your immune system is really, really healthy. They've shown vaccines work better in people who've taken exercise. And again, you're probably all going to be queuing up for the vaccines now. Get a bit fitter because that means the vaccine will really work and really protect you. And if you get fit, you won't get infected anyway because your immune system is good. So there's really good advice there to take a bit of exercise. Really important. And then, of course, the psychological impact is huge, and study after study, it's great reliever of depression. Very clear evidence, as good as any medication, by the way, in most studies. Clearly, there could be serious depression, you need more than this, but exercise is very good. It's very good for your self-esteem, just doing a bit of exercise. And we think it's because you get these things called endorphins, and they cheer you up a bit anyway, but you feel good about yourself when you exercise. So again, that's a really good reason to do it. Now, let's dig into sports medicine in a bit more detail. And as I say, this is the more medical side of this. And doctors will provide advice to anybody about exercise and what to do, and they'll measure things in you and make sure everything's fine, you know. So it's an important part of medicine at one level. But I guess it really comes into its own when it comes to injuries. And of course, sports people are always getting injured. Everybody who does any exercise will sprain a muscle or will fall over on the tennis court or whatever it is and become injured. And of course, if you're an elite athlete, they want to get you back on the field quickly. And of course, you can't be using dangerous things that are illegal to get people back up there. So it's all to do with the legal aspects of this and how to treat someone who's been injured. The first thing is anti-inflammatories. And they're often recommended if you sprain, say, a muscle during sport. And good studies, they've been shown to be beneficial. Don't take too much of them. But what they're doing is they're dampening down the injury that's happening in your tissue. So it kind of slows down the injury a bit and then allows repair to happen. And that's why anti-inflammatories are often recommended, particularly if you're older. They're a good idea. If you're younger, they can slow down repair a bit. So they're not quite as recommended for younger people, but certainly for older people. And it is a work in progress, actually, as to whether you should take them. But in general terms, if you're older especially, there's no harm in taking a little bit of anti-inflammatory. Things like paracetamol, ibuprofen, they're good, you know. And of course, be careful with the dose, but you know, it's a useful thing if you've been injured. A big one that is really interesting, in my opinion, and I kind of came across this quite recently, is, you know, some sports people after a sporting event, they jump into a bucket of ice. Rugby players do it. Now, is that good or not? Well, first of all, it certainly is a shock to the system, and people feel probably good when they get out of the ice because it's so miserable to be in it. 17 separate studies, and we love numbers to give us evidence, you know. 17 separate studies have been done. Guess what? It's no effect at all. So you might as well just rest.
All for nothing.
Isn't that great? Because if you rest, now your muscles can relax a bit and repair, because the sport would have torn your muscles. Little micro tears have happened in your muscles. And just resting allows the muscle to come back. So they reckon there's no need to be jumping into ice water. That study involved 8-minute plunge. Andy Murray, a tennis player, he's famous for jumping into an ice bucket for 8 minutes. I mean, the theory was it would decrease the temperature in the muscle, decrease the blood flow, and that might limit inflammation, you see, and stop some of the damage. But in fact, there's no evidence for that at all. And of course, we do put bags of peas, don't we, on a sprain. And it might be good for that, by the way. If you're a bad sprain, the cold might be beneficial to slow things down, or take an anti-inflammatory to slow things down. But in general terms, after a regular sporting event, when you haven't strained anything, the ice bucket may not be scientifically proven to be any good, I suppose. So you want to watch that one. But as I say, overall, anti-inflammatories, especially in the over 65s, is a pretty good thing to do. Now, the next question then is, of course, what is the basis for superb athletic performance? And this strays into the doping area, which is the more serious part of this. And lots of illegal things are given to athletes, or have been in history, to make them perform better. And they would often damage people, actually. So it's a really serious thing, the doping area. But what about genetics? Can you be naturally really, really good at some sport or other? Well, great studies here. East Africans are very good long distance runners, whereas West Africans are better at sprinting. And they've studied them. And again, it seems to be to do with the overall leg to body ratio. East Africans have longer, slender legs, and they reckon that's part of it. They've looked to see if they can find genes in the East Africans, and they haven't really found them, it must be told. One idea here would be they actually run a lot anyway as children, for whatever reason. Like, culturally, they're running everywhere. They run to school every day, for example, and that might get them trained, I suppose, and get used to the idea of endurance. But again, you know, if you've got the right kind of muscle composition, you're probably going to be better at sprinting. So there's something going on physically there. And they have found 3 genes that seem to predict endurance and other characteristics in sport. And it's really great, this, because the evidence is really strong. There's a gene called ACTN3, ACTN3. There's a form of that, one form of it, and it's one that you might have and I mightn't, can make you a very good sprinter. It ties into the muscle capacity for sprinting. So that gene is a marker for being a good sprinter. The second one is a thing called erythropoietin, or EPO. Now, EPO is a natural hormone in your body. It brings out red blood cells. That's its job. And red blood cells come from your bone marrow into your bloodstream, and they carry oxygen around your body. So you might imagine the more EPO you have, the more oxygen you will get through your red blood cells, and the muscles might work even better. And EPO, of course, has been used in doping, tragically. And it's killed people because it makes your blood as thick as jam, as someone once said, because your blood is now full of red blood cells. It's very viscous. And people have died of heart attacks on EPO, so it's actually very serious. But there are people walking around that make a bit more EPO naturally. And guess what? They are slightly better at endurance. They're slightly stronger. And a big one that was really unexpected was they thought that EPO worked by getting red blood cells out of the bone marrow to bring oxygen around. But guess what? It also works on the brain and makes you more enduring. In other words, you can put up with more pain. You can keep going because EPO goes to the brain.
No pain, no gain.
and gets the brain to change. And then you go, oh, I'll just keep running. In other words, you suffer less, I suppose, if you're on EPO, or at least if EPO naturally will do that. So EPO is doing two things. It's getting more oxygen into your muscles and the muscles work better. And secondly, it's giving you endurance. It's making your brain change a little bit. And again, there's people walking around with a bit more EPO. And then the third one is NCore1. Now, what does NCore1 do? It builds muscle mass. And again, not surprisingly, they found people with a slightly different NCore1 and they've got slightly more muscle mass. And there was a fantastic study done there where they put NCore1 into mice. Now, they could do this, what's called transgenics. They could make more NCore1 in a mouse. And those mice had three times the amount of muscle than the mice who didn't have NCore1. They had made an incredible Hulk mouse. Can you imagine a mouse walking around with three times the muscle? Don't get into a fight with that mouse, whatever you do. But there's an example of great science. They find the gene in humans. They find a version that builds muscle a bit better in the humans who have that version. And they prove it by giving that gene to a mouse. And now the mice have three times the amount of muscle. Isn't that incredible? So again, you can imagine this sort of study. Now, the question is, if you detect some of these genes in people, should they be not allowed to participate in a sport? There has been talk of that, an unfair advantage. That's like saying, oh, you've got big feet, so you can't jump up and down on something or whatever it is. You know, that wouldn't be fair. These are natural things in people. But there's no doubt that really high-performing athletes could well have certain genetics and certain physiques that allow them to be super performing athletes, is the way to think of it, I suppose. And we can't disqualify them from sport, can we? Because they've got these things naturally, I guess, is the way to think of it. And then, of course, what's very funny about this area that I love is, could you make a superhero then?
Dr. David Banner, physician, scientist, searching for a way to tap into the hidden strengths that all humans have. Then an accidental overdose of gamma radiation.
Now, I'm not saying we should do this, there's ethical issues here, but could you give someone that actin 3 gene? Or could you give NCore1? Could you make an incredible Hulk, say? And obviously, we're not saying you should do that. But maybe there is a scientific basis for superheroes. Maybe when the Hulk began to get angry, maybe NCore1 was switched on.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
And his muscle mass builds up, for example. There's no evidence for this because it is science fiction. But still, we wonder, could we one day make a race of superheroes? And that got me thinking, maybe Cú Chulainn, one of our great Irish heroes, maybe he had NCore1 overexpression in his tissues and he had actin 3 there as well and made loads of EPO. Because he was a superhero. He was able to take a chunk of land from Ireland and throw it into the Irish Sea, forming the Isle of Man and leaving Loch Ness behind. This has been scientifically proven. You heard it here. We've evidence of Cú Chulainn doing that. And we've taken some of his DNA. No, I'm only kidding. But you do wonder if these superheroes, then maybe we can see them as having these fantastic genetic differences. So there you have it. The science of sports medicine. Many different aspects there. I hope you found that interesting. And please subscribe to the podcast. It would be great if you would. And also tune in every week. I'm with Pat Kenny on News Talk.